So this is our Happy House Hunters group, and we are talking about the six F's of real estate: how to find your next deal, how to fund your next deal, and today's topic, of course, is funding with Omar. And then once you find it and fund it, how to fix it, because there's always something that needs fixed, like Deepak's drain. He just had to have that fixed. And then once you find it, fund it, and fix it, then you have to decide, am I going to flip it or am I going to fill it? In other words, are you in the market to just try to rehab something and then put it back out on the market and make a profit? Or are you a buy and hold investor where you're going to build maybe a retirement income or some passive income, or for whatever reason, you've decided that you wanted to do the holding, the buy and hold? And then finally, the very last F is, how many of those do you have to do to find your freedom number? In other words, let's make your day job optional. I'm not saying that you have to quit, because sometimes you're in a day job that, the money's pretty good, and I stayed in my day job for years after I started creating passive income, because it allowed me to buy more real estate because I could get there faster by keeping the day job. I didn't have to quit it. I liked it and it paid well, so I stayed. But you do reach a point where you can then make the decision. Do I want to just live on the passive income, or do I want to buy more buy and holds, or do I now have this amazing team I've put together and I can just keep flipping and making money that way? So it's up to you. There's a million and one ways to make money in real estate. You can buy it, you can sell it, you can rent it, you can hold it. There's so many ways. You can just sit on it, and I've even done that. If you're young enough, and I'm going to say 40 or younger, if you're in your 40s or younger, you can actually buy real estate that the numbers don't even really work. But maybe the market is so tight that you're thinking, you know what? I'm going to buy two or three of these and I'm just going to sit on them. You know why? Because over time, when those properties appreciate and when your mortgage gets paid down, even if you fund them to get into them, at some point, the numbers are going to look really good. Let's go back and think about maybe our parents or our grandparents on what they paid for a property. Wouldn't you love to be able to do that today? Can you imagine if you could just sit on a few of those, even though the numbers weren't perfect, but you could just sit on them for 20 or 30 years, and all of a sudden those numbers are looking pretty darn good. So again, there's a million and one ways to make money in real estate. So today we're going to talk about how to fund some of those investment properties. So my first question, and I want to introduce Omar today, and he is my phone shut off. I had it all set up and then my phone shut off on me because I was telling my Adam story.
Yeah.
Oh, anyway, he is with Spring Garden Capital, and I was just mentioning his pictures he had behind him there, and it's the Cincinnati neighborhoods and the Columbus neighborhood. So he's working in the Cincinnati and Columbus market, and don't think that you can't cast your net a little wider. If you're looking around in a particular market and you're not seeing properties that have the numbers that you're looking for, cast your net a little wider, because a lot of times you can get some properties in another market that are in great shape, great pricing, and all you need to do is build your team over there. And at the end of the day, if you're a buy and hold investor, at the end of the day, you can always use a property management company if it's something too far away that you don't want to try to drive there to flip the circuit breaker when they pop it, or or fix a doorknob when it sticks. You can have a property management company that, and again, we're not talking about buying and holding today, but I will say this. If you decide to be a buy and hold investor, which I am, that's kind of my sweet spot. If you are, you can kind of pick and choose what services you want a property management company to do. Sometimes you might say, I don't want to do any of it. I want them to do the evictions. I want them to do the new move-ins. I want them to do all the rehab. I want them to do all the maintenance. But you might say, you know what? I just need somebody to collect the rent and do the day-to-day stuff. But when I have a move out, I've got a couple of guys that I really trust that are not very expensive, and I want to go in and get it flipped ready for the next tenant. Or it might be opposite. You might say, I want to do the day-to-day stuff. I can have a software program to collect the rent and take care of minor maintenance stuff, but I don't want to do the big flip in between tenants, or I don't want to do the big rehab when I buy one. And so you can tailor what you want a property management company to do for you. So don't shy away from the buy and hold. And the reason I say that at the beginning of almost every one of these calls is because the biggest thing that I hear is, oh, my uncle used to have rentals and he hated getting called in the middle of the night. So I never want to do that. Trust me, there's ways you can do that and not get called in the middle of the night. There's all kinds of technology today that you can either manage yourself or have a management company do, and it becomes incredibly passive. And most of the millionaires in the world have done it with real estate. So keep that in mind. So anyway, Omar, talk to us. You are the Ohio representative for Spring Garden Capital. And how does the Columbus and well, let me ask you this first. Tell us, how in the world did you get into lending to begin with? And then tell us how the Columbus and Cincinnati market differ.
Yeah, that's a great question, Kathy. I got into lending by accident. I was always in finance, budgeting type of roles coming out of college, and I found myself working for the state of Ohio, working for a program in the Ohio Board of Regents in their budgeting and finance department, and I was also a part of the administration. And so
Okay.
when they new administration came on, I find myself out of a job. And one of my neighbors reached out and said, "Hey, I think you would be a good lender." And I was like, I never thought of myself in lending. But I got a job at Huntington Bank. They were hiring, they were expanding at the
Okay.
time. And it was right at the end of the 2008 recession.
Okay.
So it was really interesting to see, from my perspective, serving real estate clients at that time, and the different impacts in different neighborhoods. So I primarily was in Powell, and people there, their houses were stable, they were doing okay, they were happy, they were kind. And then I transferred to New Albany. And it was a different story in New Albany because all the New Albany money was new money, and
Yes.
they were stressed. Everybody was underwater, and the investors were, especially the flip guys, were just getting washed. You know,
Well, and
really.
even just the homeowners, because they bought those big houses at the height of the market. And
Exactly.
so all of a sudden, when the appraisals started coming in a lot less, they were totally upside down in those mortgages.
And you know, I never w wish that to happen to anybody, right? But in hindsight, for me as a financial professional, being able to see that and seeing people try to navigate through that was good in terms of a perspective of how things can go well, but things cannot go so well, right? And so that kind of experience has I think given me an advantage of perspective when working with with investment professionals who have never seen that kind of downturn before. And so, you know, experience is good in that way. But that's how I got into lending, and then I've stayed in it ever since. Honestly, I've been become because I was watching other people build their wealth. You just mentioned, you know, that buy and hold strategy, right? I saw a lot of buy and hold people who did well, you know, with that strategy throughout this past decade. So I was watching them and I was like, well, let me do it myself. So I became an investor, and so I have four doors, and I've done a couple of flips to get to those four doors, and it's worked out great for me. So it's a way for me to help other people through my experience in both lending and as an investor.
And I'm sure that you'll support this thought, Omar, is that you just have to be careful not to get overextended. And some of the buy and hold investors during that downturn back in 08, 09, It was the ones that were overextended that got into trouble, because once folks started losing their homes because they were upside down and they lost their jobs and they started to go into foreclosure, a lot of those buy and hold investors had they had too many mortgages, and they couldn't keep all of their bases covered and still survive and still live on, off of the income. And so that's where some of those buy and hold investors got into trouble. So just be careful not to get overextended. That's why you need to work with someone like Omar, because he can tell you where to put on the guardrails. He can tell you if you're starting to get a little too close on your numbers there. You have to have some room to survive, because we don't know exactly what's going to happen from year to year, and we have to be prepared for that. So don't get yourself overextended. So tell us, how does the Columbus and Cincinnati market differ a little bit today? Like you, I got into real estate investing. You got into the funding part. I got into the investing part during that turndown, because there were tons of houses that were in foreclosure that went back to the banks. And of course, the banks, they don't want to own those houses. They're in the business of loaning money. So they had to get rid of those off their books. And so I have a strategy, and I'll mention this for those that are listening. I have a strategy that you can either be the first one through the door when a property hits the market, or you can be the last one through the door. And let me explain that. If you're the first one through the door, if you're looking at real estate every single day, I look at real estate, and I know some of you may or may not believe this, but I look at real estate 2 to 3 hours a day. Because I love looking. And you know what? When I'm saturated in the market that much, when a good deal pops up, I know it. And right away, I'm like, oh, what's wrong with this one? Why is it so inexpensive? And then when you look around and you realize maybe it's all just cosmetic stuff, or maybe it's a distressed seller, you want to be the first one through the door. You want to call that whoever is in charge of that particular property, and you want to say, what do I need to do next? I want to make an offer on this one, because you are the first one through the door. However, back in 08, 09, I didn't know what I didn't know. And so I was afraid to pull the trigger. So I just kind of waited and waited and waited. And finally, there was these lonely little houses on the market that nobody wanted. And so finally, I was like, what? They're selling a two-story, three-bedroom house for $36,000, really? And so I got a hold of the whoever was, had the house listed, and I said, "What's the deal?" And they're like, "Yeah, it's a foreclosure. The bank just wants it gone. 30,000 would probably take it." And I'm like, "Really?" I'm like, "Okay." And so I jumped on that. I happened to have a little bit of cash flow at the time, and I said, how many of these can I buy? And so I bought several. So I don't have a lot of mortgages for that reason. So it gave me a lot of room in the deal. Now, what you have to know about foreclosures, for those of you that are listening, is that oftentimes, if a person loses their job or can't pay their mortgage or whatever, they are not repairing the house because they don't have the funds. They know they're going to have to move. They know they're going to lose the house at some point. And so not only do they stop maintaining the house, but they oftentimes will try to strip out the house. They'll try to sell off the kitchen, sell off the bathroom, sell off all the doors, sell off the furnace, the hot water tank, anything that they can take off of that house. And of course, we're not going to have a discussion about whether that's right, wrong, immoral, or whatever, because a lot of folks are like, well, but they didn't have the right to. Okay, that's another whole discussion. The point is it happened, and does happen. And so oftentimes those houses that nobody wanted, those lonely little houses, were stripped out. So for 36,000, I still had to put quite a bit back into the house. And I remember Mark and I, we were working on one over in Asheville at the time. We paid 36, which is why that number sticks in my mind. And it's a three bedroom corner lot, two car garage, nice yard, but it had been totally stripped out. And I was kind of grumbling about it. And I said, oh, I can't believe we got to put the furnace in, the hot water tank, and the air unit. And Mark turned to me and he goes, that's why we got it for 36. Stop complaining.
But here's the thing is you also did the numbers, right? And
Yeah.
you said with the additional value that I'm going to put to this thing, it's going to cash flow for me for in the long term.
Yep.
And the mechanicals, which you just described, are going to be brand new. So I know I'm going to
Exactly.
have a full life for them. And I'm in it for the long haul. So it's going to work out for me. Now, if it was going to be a flip, that's a different story. You got to look at the market conditions and the resale and all that stuff. And is the neighborhood, can it tolerate that resale value? But for that buy and hold, I think, for the past, decade, that has served you really well.
It has. It actually has. So I got so excited, I bought 28 doors.
I don't blame you.
And again, I had some mortgages, mixed in with the ones that I didn't have mortgages on. And so over the next, from that time, over the next, 20 years, I was able to pay off a lot of those mortgages. And now those properties are cash flowing even better. And it was my retirement. It was that was how I decided that I was going to save for retirement. There was no way I could save enough money. At the time I was in the salon industry, I couldn't do enough customers to pay all my bills and put back enough money and invest it somewhere to have enough to live on for, several years, 40 years maybe, if I retired at age 60 and I'm going to be around another 20, 30, 40 years, I need to have the cash. So real estate was the only way that I could see to do that, which is why I invested as quickly and as heavily as I could once that aha moment hit me.
Absolutely. And that's the thing that really motivates me and gets me out of bed every day is that I'm able to do this for myself, right? And achieve my lifestyle goals through real estate, but also help others. And for whatever reason that people want to get into real estate, the barrier to entry is not that high. And the best part I think about real estate is that it doesn't matter what color, what gender, where you're from, it doesn't matter. As long as you're willing to put in the work and do your due diligence appropriately, get educated so that you know what you're doing, anybody can do it because it's basic math. It's not rocket science,
It's not, but it is that risk factor because, again,
That's
I think
right.
at the beginning we don't know what we don't know. And so we have a tendency to go, oh, this is a lot of my savings that I'm going to put out there. And if I do it wrong, it's gone.
That's the
And
psychology, right?
yes. So again, start small. I started my whole real estate career, believe it or not, in my 20s. I bought a mobile home and I lived in the mobile home. And 5 years later, I sold the mobile home for more than I paid for it because I had it all fixed up and new carpet and fresh paint, and it looked adorable. And I was able then to take that money that I got out of selling it, and that was enough to make a down payment on my first piece of real estate. And so most of 25-year-olds, they're like, "You're buying a house?" They couldn't even fathom buying a house at that age. But I had bought that mobile home, kept it for 5 years, and then sold it, and that became my down. So again, it's all about knowing the numbers, the math, how to leverage, and start small. So I have a very good friend. He does nothing but invest in mobile homes even today. And so I tell a lot of young people, start with the $10,000 mobile home. You paid more for your car.
It's a very common strategic approach is the flipping to getting to the buy and hold. And I think that's what I'm hearing from you is that that was a strategy. Instead of waiting to save up the money for your first buy and hold, flip a couple of properties, and then that way it gets you the assets so that you can be in a position to hold long term.
Absolutely. So talk to us about the Columbus market versus the Cincinnati market. Is Columbus still a good market for these newbie investors?
Absolutely. I think that the thing about the Columbus market is we still have a ways to go in terms of fulfilling our potential as a city. We have a dynamic industry mix, right? So if even in a downturn, Central Ohio stays stable because we have education, we have medical, we have insurance, we have government, we have a lot of recession resistant industries, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, the other thing is our moderate growth. We're not extreme growth, so that doesn't attract over speculative investors, right? And so then that way you can have common sense approaches and opportunities that allow for moderate growth, not extreme growth. And compared to Cincinnati, I would say the price points are a little higher, the acquisition prices are higher. It is getting harder to find deals that pencil. However, the rents are going up, unfortunately, and that is not great for affordability. However, for an investor, that gives you a little bit added security that the market will be there and the demand is there. So that's on the Columbus side. And then on the Cincinnati side, similar dynamic industry, price points are lower and opportunities for appreciation and solid rent capture is there.
I love that. And in my search, I do cast my net a little wider, and I'm always kind of looking around in that Cincinnati area. Because again, I love a river town. I always have. You always want to get on the water, so.
Absolutely. One thing I would mention is that, we are serving the Columbus Metro and Cincinnati Metro within, up to 100 miles outside of the city center. So, those Lancasters, those legacy cities who are also appreciating in value and stabilizing because people don't think twice about commuting from Springfield. Those are opportunities that we're willing to take a look at, and some of those deals pencil a little bit better as well. And if you're willing to, venture out there, we can help you out there.
Oh, perfect, perfect, perfect. Because Lancaster is one of my bases, because I love the tax base down there is a lot less for property taxes. So, and a lot of the rents are very similar, a little less, but not a lot. Very similar to the Columbus market, and because there are a lot of commuters and they're working in Columbus and living in Lancaster. And so I actually have a bigger cash flow on some of those properties than I do the ones in Columbus or in Kanawha Winchester. I live in Kanawha Winchester. That's where I'm coming to you from today. And the tax base, the property tax base here is pretty high. So I have five properties right in Canal proper, and my cash flow percentages are actually less than the ones in Lancaster, even though the properties are higher valued. So again, that's all about working the numbers. Omar can help you with that. He can help you make sense of all those numbers. Talk to us about the common sense underwriting that happens with your organization.
Yeah, I would say, common sense underwriting means what is the true risk of the project? And we're looking at it, in partnership with you, right? And so, we're looking for, credit score in the mid 600s, but if there's something a little lower or there's a reason, we're going to look at that, right? So medical, that doesn't mean that you're a not a quality borrower because something happened that's out of your control in terms of a medical expense, right? A common thing that we see a lot is credit cards being over-leveraged because, the nature of the work you're doing. So you're buying, a $5,000HVAC and it's on your credit for a month or two, and now, that you take a hit on that. Or even more than that, right? I've seen large purchases of materials on credit cards, but we're not going to penalize you for the nature of the work you're doing. That doesn't relate to actual risk. That doesn't actually relate to you being a borrower that doesn't pay back your loan. So those are examples of kind of the ways that we're looking at risk. And then, in terms of the project itself, this thing needs to pencil out. It needs to make sense for you, and it also needs to make sense for us. So we're looking at, probably 75% LTV, 85% LTC, and 1.2 debt coverage ratio. that's normal, right? If it's outside of that, let's talk about it, right? And let us know why you feel that this thing still makes sense to you, and then we'll discuss it and move forward accordingly.
Now, do you just do investment properties, or do you do one if, let's say, an investor wants to buy something? And we talked before about, you flip a couple to finally get the buy and holds. And my strategy had been to buy one, live in it, like that first mobile home. I lived in it for 5 years, and that's a great way to, I call that the long flip. And that's a great way that you can flip some property is buy something that you want to live in and then turn it into a rental. Or leverage it to buy something else, to maybe get out of the one family into a fourplex or whatever. Do you do owner occupied properties at all or no?
No, we don't. We only do non-owner occupied. And the reason is our perm lending partners won't fund that. I would say that I do have access to people that can help you with that. I'm actually currently in a house hack myself, and it's a perfectly fine way to increase your portfolio. But it's just not something that we do.
Okay. How do you build those relationships with your actual borrowers or the investors that are connecting with you? How do you have a pipeline that it, you
Yeah.
know, do you let them know if there's properties that they might be interested in? So, I mean, do you do any of that groundwork for them in lending, or do you just wait for the investor to reach out to you?
It's a dialogue. I would say that we're in constant communication with our borrowers. Many of them have become good friends. And it's just we bump into each other. I bumped into you multiple times now at these networking events. And it's a great community. And so they're like-minded individuals that they're kind of my kind of people, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, optimistic, hardworking, purpose-driven. And so it's just natural that we are just in continuous dialogue. So the way that I think we are engaging with our client base is making sure they're aware of the value proposition, making sure that they know what they're getting from what we do, right? So the biggest thing for us is speed and a surety. And so, that's how we differentiate ourselves. The first thing we do is make sure that they know from the get-go what they're up against in terms of total project cost. There's a lot of hidden costs that you might see from private lenders, and our differentiator is that we're showing you everything. So that way you're going in knowing exactly how much this thing is going to cost within, a thousand or two, and bake in, some cushion as well, and analyze the deal together, right? And then move forward if it makes sense. And then the speed part is where we, add value. From beginning to end, from a full application, we can close in less than 30 days. And the way we do that is through running, our title and underwriting and appraisal all simultaneously. We're not doing it waiting on one thing to finish before the other. We're just running it all at the same time. And that way, you're going to close on time.
Well,
And then,
I love that. I love that. And especially once you build a relationship with your investors, you kind of know their numbers already. So when
Exactly.
they bring you a deal, you're like, oh yeah, we can get this one done.
That's another thing that I personally like to do is create a file even before we have a project that we're looking at together. And so that way we just focus on the project, and if it pencils, then we can just move forward. We already have the docs on the file.
Yep. I do that too. I've worked with a particular hometown bank for a lot of years, and so every year I update all my documentation with them just so they have all my current income and properties and rental incomes and mortgage rates, and they have all of that on a spreadsheet, and I update that every year. So for those of you that are listening to this, if you're starting to go down that path of investing in properties, put your spreadsheet together, have all those numbers ready so that your lender, it brings Omar up to speed so much faster if you kind of already have that information.
That's a great point. And I would say that I am explicit in letting people know that I'm not doing a hard pull when I create a file. And I would ad advise anybody who's working with a financial professional to be explicit about that and just say that I do not want a hard pull. I will make sure that we have up-to-date financials, but please do not do a hard pull.
Yeah, because that affects your credit. Yeah, for
Absolutely.
those that are brand new in investing listening to this call, a hard pull does take away some of your credit points whenever a lender does a hard pull. And again, Omar just needs you to be truthful and authentic and what it is that you have so that he can best serve you. It's really hard when you have an investor out there that they don't want to tip their hand for whatever reason, and Omar has to kind of pull it out of you to figure it out if he can do this deal or not. So the more information that you put together and have ready to go, the better it is for your financial picture. Now, Omar, you have all different kinds of various products you have to buy, to fix, to sell, and even lines of credit. Tell us about the different types of products.
Yeah, so our most common product is the acquisition rehab loan, and that is something that we use for early stage acquisition. It could be even land, but most of the time it's a single family or a duplex or something like that. We can even go up to 40 units. That covers your acquisition and it covers your construction budget. We also include an interest reserve to make sure that you're just have once the project starts, all you do is focus on the project itself. You're not worried about monthly payments, and you're worried about more about getting the project completed on time, or maybe even early. Because if you finish early, that interest reserve comes back to you. It's reimbursed back to you, the unused interest reserve. The other product is our 30-year fixed perm loan, and so that's kind of rare to see a 30-year fixed, and so we offer that, and it's great to have as an exit strategy on a hold strategy, right? So if you are fixing and then holding, we have already underwritten you, and we know that our partner is going to approve you for the 30-year perm loan. And then the line of credit. This is also good for candidates who have paid off properties and would like to just utilize a line of credit on their investment property, which is rare to see. And that also allows you the flexibility to use that line however you see fit, because you're not really having to do draws or anything like that. It's just a revolving line of credit off of a paid off asset.
So my question, being an investor, is do you do any refis? Let's say that I have, again, I have some mortgages still, not a lot, but a few. And at the time, of course, as we all know, interest rates were what, 3%, 4.2%. Anyway, things are now climbing. Interest rates are going up, and some of mine were variable, and so some of those interest rates are coming up. Do you do refis if an investor like myself has some interest rates that are getting a little higher? And what is your 30-year fixed rate currently?
That's a great question. So, yes, we do, and it is a it's a tough psychological thing for an investor to get comfortable with, right? Because for a long time we've been used to 3, 4, 5% on our long-term refis. And if you're sitting on something that's at 3% and then you have to refi at, let's say, the mid sevens, does that make sense? For some, it does make sense because the liquidity and the ability to generate more cash flow off of that liquidity is the best way to go, even if you're carrying a mid sevens rate. For others, it just it they can't let go of that low rate. And
I
I
get it.
understand. Yeah. So, but I think here's my uneducated take, because nobody knows what the future holds. This is, I think, the lowest rates are going to be for a while. I think rates are going to continue to increase. So if you were to be, if you do want to get that liquidity in the next 5 to 10 years, you're not going to get lower rates than this. And if there are lower rates, you can refinance, but you can't predict the future. And I think there's a lot of people who are hoping for rates to go down, but just hoping doesn't make it true. And so I think that I think some people, as they see rates continue to climb, they're going to have to say, all right, there's no other way to get the liquidity out of this other than selling, and I still want to hold it, and it's an asset that performs really well for me, even if I'm at 50% LTV. And so that I think that's what's going to happen, and I'm here to help.
I definitely agree with you on your thinking there. I'm a girl of the 70s. I graduated from high school back in 1974, and my first home purchase, I believe, was like in 1979, and interest rates was in the double digits. We were at 13, 14%. And I remember when they went down to 9, we all ran out and refinanced because we thought 9, we'll never see 9 again. And so you can imagine my surprise when here recently we got clear down into the 3s and 4s, or even in some cases on FHAs, even lower than that, into the 2s, 2.75. I mean, it was like free money. So I agree with Omar. I don't think we're going to see rates go that low for some time. And because the lenders are all trying to catch up, because again, they weren't, if you were getting free money, they were giving away free money. And so they're still in the catch-up phase of lending. So I don't see rates going that low again anytime soon. And so yeah, I like the idea of the fixed 30-year, rolling some of your variables over to a fixed rate, and just it allows you to dream bigger, because now you know exactly what your numbers are going to be for the next few years. And you're not saying, well, if this goes up to 9%, then I can't really invest over here because now I'm going to be paying a bigger mortgage on the properties I still have on a variable rate. So again, my recommendation is lock down some of those rates so that you can dream a little bigger. Tell us
Perfect.
about equity contributions for projects. How does that work, Omar?
Well, for the longest time, right, equity contributions have usually come from friends and family, right, or who was in your network. And that created a lot of inequity, right? So if you were a young woman, and you wanted to get into this business, and you were trying to convince your friends and family to invest in you, you might not have had the best luck. Or if you were an African American, and your network just didn't have it to give, right? So Spring Garden Equity was created as a sidecar to help established, proven borrowers scale and achieve their goals through a contribution that allowed them to replace mom and dad, essentially, right? It just kind of streamlines the process. The benefits are that it allows proven borrowers to come to the table with less cash. It is a mezz loan. That means that it is a second note. It is more expensive than our primary loan, but it allows borrowers who need to put up a lot of cash to put less cash in. And it enables borrowers to retain more working capital, increase the velocity of their projects by not having to put as much cash into the project.
What would be what kind of a project would be a good candidate for that?
I think your typical fix and flip, let's say you're working on one fix and flip and you see another opportunity for a new one that is penciling out great, but your money's tied up in the first one. That's where we will come in and help you, gather enough equity to get the second one going. So when I say increase your velocity, instead of doing, three or four flips a year, maybe you can do six or eight just because of liquidity.
Good to know. Good to know. And for those that have made the decision that you're going to invest in real estate, keep Omar's phone number close. Now, what is one of the biggest challenges in the Columbus market that your company has had to overcome?
I think that, the biggest challenge, I think it's, I don't think there's really that much challenge. I think the challenge is just getting in front of people, and it is a relationship game, right? And so it's building trust, getting the chance to deliver and show people how we can perform and how we can help be their partner long term.
Well, and again,
And it,
like I said before, you have to, oftentimes it's the first one through the door that gets the deal. So you have to build that relationship with Omar early. Have your financials over there so that he knows who you are, and that part, then he can already underwrite that part before you bring him the deal. So then when the deal comes, you can get it done or you lose the deal.
Absolutely.
I can't tell you the number of properties just this week that I said, "Oh, this one looks kind of good," and the next day it's gone.
And that's why we work on speed, right? We know how fast these things can go. And so, if I have enough information on the deal, and I kind of had like a template survey kind of that I send out. If I have all the information I need, I can price out the deal and get you a term sheet, within 24 hours. So it gives you it kind of arms you with the information and certainty that you need to go ahead and put an offer.
How do you support the neighborhoods that have that lower income? Is
It's
there
getting
is
harder.
yeah, it is. It
It
is.
is. It is getting harder. Because that is what we were built on is, when the crash happened, Spring Garden opened up shop and said, we're going to just continue to operate like we had before because we think this is a safe asset and people need a place to live and we don't need to be, pushing the market to the highest potential. If we're doing, low to moderate income housing, there's always going to be a demand for this, and it's a solid asset. And nowadays the price points are getting pushed up higher. It's harder to find deals that pencil out. However, it's not impossible, and I think that there's still a lot of room to grow, especially in Columbus. I would say, and I'm saying this to anybody who will listen, rezoning is coming. It's already happened in the major corridors, and it's going to happen citywide. What is that going to do for you? That's going to allow you guys to put ADUs on existing properties that were only able to have one building on it, right?
Yeah, Lancaster's already pushing that. So yes, it's coming because we all see what's coming to Central Ohio, and we're very short on housing. So zoning is going to try to do what they can to make this city as successful as possible, because as these businesses come, then workers come, and as the workers come, the housing needs go up, and we're already short on housing. So
Boy.
yeah, we can see all of that coming. What kind of resources do you have that you how do you share those with your investors to help them get the most mileage out of their portfolio?
Well, I would say that just to piggyback off of your comment about rezoning, our headquarters is in Philadelphia. And I'm opening up the office here in Columbus and Cincinnati, but we're used to row houses. We're used to different housing typology, that middle income, more dense type of typology. We're used to ADUs. And so finding a lender that's comfortable with different housing typologies is important. And then also, there's also barriers in terms of appraisals and all that stuff. So you got to find the right team to allow you to be successful in overcoming some of the barriers that are still going to be there, even when the initial barrier of zoning goes away. I forgot your question. That what was
No,
the,
no. How do you have resources that you can actually help that investor navigate some of that?
I think the resources are just our, I would say, like, I think we have 200 years of experience based on our staff. And so we've seen it all. And the what I started off with is just my experience of, experiencing different business cycles. And so those are the kind of resources that we provide, is just kind of being a thought leader and thought partner with our partners.
I love that. Sue has her hand up. Sue, go ahead. Do you have a question or comment for Omar?
The rules for shared housing in the Columbus, Ohio area, like how many unrelated people could live in one house?
Not off the top of my head, but I can definitely get back to you on that. I've been hearing a lot about that lately in the real estate association groups about
Yeah.
shared housing.
Thank you.
And those are the pressures that we're starting to see, where people are considering that type of housing, because housing affordability is getting so tight.
What I have realized in the markets that I'm in is that the zoning offices are very open to having conversations with you. So there's nothing wrong with just if you have a property already in mind, Sue, that you think might work for something like that, just go visit the local zoning for that particular region and just have a conversation and they'll steer you in the right direction because they're there to help and they have to, of course, abide by the Ohio Revised Code, but there's all kinds of variances that you can apply for, and they're going to be the voice that knows the ropes the best because that's what they do. That's, I mean, they're entrenched in the zoning thought process all day long, and so they'll help you in any way they can to let you know what you can or cannot do in a particular area. And we've always found them to be incredibly helpful. A lot of people get a little upset with zoning. But here's what I want to say about that is the rules are there to protect you. The rules are not there to police you. The rules are there to protect you. If you do everything by the rules, and then if something goes wrong, it relieves your liability because you can say, I did it according to the zoning code. You know, it was up to code. And how many times do we see some huge catastrophe and we say, why did they let them get away with that? And it's usually where some company or organization has tried to get, you know, under the fence somehow and not abide by the local zoning. Like, what was it, the supper club that caught on fire and people couldn't get out because they had a side door chained shut because they didn't want people to come in that way, but yet all those people died because of the fire and they couldn't get out. And zoning said you weren't allowed to have that door chained when you were open, but the supper club did. Because they felt it was in their best interest to have that door locked. And so, again, the code is for a reason. It's there to protect us. It's not there to police us. So anyhow, visit your zoning office. I find them to be very helpful. Any other comments or questions for Omar? Yes, Raj.
Omar, I live in New Jersey, so I know this is a Ohio-based call. Are you licensed to write loans out in my neck of the woods?
Yes, we have actually We have an office that serves New Jersey, out of Philadelphia. Are
Great.
you in southern New Jersey or northern New
I'm in
Jersey?
Northern New Jersey, 30
Okay.
minutes outside of Manhattan,
Yeah, and
New
we're
York.
expanding as well, so we might have an office even closer pretty soon.
And you guys specialize in the DSCR, debt service
Correct.
consolidation loans for buy and
Correct.
hold multifamily. That's the product I'd look into. Now, usually that requires 25% down if it's an investment property. Is there any ways around that? How to get that lowered, or are there any grants to help with the down payment? Just to, get started in buying and holding, or looking to get this on autopilot so that it's all running and being paid for by the tenants that are in place.
No, actually, I mean, what you're going to see out there is you're going to see 75% LTV as a standard. 80, I mean, we will do up to 85% loan to cost, so
Okay.
that way we can factor in. The best way to do it is just to show you, right? And that's kind of the best way to articulate what you got to bring to the table.
Yep.
But that 85% up to 85% loan to cost should cover a majority of your rehab expenses.
And we could always get a second loan for the down payment then, right? Or this,
Correct.
see, I'm all about creative financing. And that's why I'm here on this call today to,
That's right.
I attend a lot of it and I want to research creative funding and then, get more customers for you that way.
Yeah, that's right.
So if you could just put your contact information in the chat and I can take a screenshot of that. And I'd like to work with you once I'm good and ready.
Happy to do so.
Yes, and Omar, make sure that you click that it goes out to everyone, because a couple of folks are over in the audience listening. And so make sure there when you say to, make sure you click the everyone button when you put that in there. And
Got
I'll
it.
also put my contact information there as well.
I'll do the same too. I'm a general contractor out in northern New Jersey, so just to give you a
Perfect.
little snapshot, I build ground up construction homes, but all my money's tied up in material and the deal. So to get into buy and hold, I need to access another product. So that's where Omar would come in. And I'll put my information in the chat as well so you guys have it and we can be in
Yes.
touch.
Raj, thank you so much. And
Welcome.
you also might take a look at your portfolio and see where possibly you could just do a line of credit on maybe some property that you have some equity in to get that down payment together. But make sure that you include it in your numbers to make sure your deal works for you. You don't want to, again, you don't want to be too heavy in the borrowing portion of the deal.
So Omar, I do have equity, but what if that equity, I mean, a good amount of equity, but it's in my primary residential home where my family resides. Part of me is kind of scared to mess with that and keep that intact. What's your thought process on that?
Everybody's different, and I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just telling you what I did. What I did was tap into my home equity through a line of credit, and that way, once the project is done, I was able to
Replenish it.
put the money back, and that was a way that I could tap into the liquidity without refinancing or anything like that. I also did that off of my brokerage account. And you could also do it off of your retirement. Again, not telling you what to do. I'm just saying these are things that I've seen other people do.
Great.
And Raj, I've done it as well. I've used my home, my actual primary residence equity, and on a line of credit, and I've gotten into several properties because I can use it over and over and over. Because again, like Omar, I pay it back at the other end of the deal. But just make sure you have enough room in the numbers. I cannot stress that enough. You just don't want to get too heavy on the borrowing side. You just always want to leave yourself some room there, because you never know when you need a new roof or a whole new furnace. So leave. And again, you're in the business. You get it. You know the cost of some of that stuff. So just make sure that if you're going to use your home equity, it's certainly a great strategy. Just make sure you have room in the numbers.
And Raj is the typical profile of a client of ours, right? Contractor that's doing some properties on the side is perfect, because operational experience is so key,
Of course.
right? Other examples of borrowers are, developers that do this for a living, right? And so they're consistently just doing one at a time, or two at a time, or 10 at a time. And then we have partners that are maybe accountants or engineers that are just doing it as a side hustle. So it ranges the type of borrower that we serve.
Raj, you're in a pretty good position. And the reason that you're a great borrower is because the lender can take a look at you and know that at the end of the day, you're going to get the project across the finish line because you have some skills in the actual game of real estate. You're not just an investor as a bystander and counting on a whole team over here somewhere to get the job
done. Exactly.
You can get it across the finish line. So you're in a good spot.
Yep. And I have a great credit score too. So that definitely helps.
Then you're in a better spot.
Yep. It's just sort of buying and holding. If I tap in my home equity in my primary home, that's going to be used for the down payment to acquire the investment property. How do I pay that back? It's over a period of time then from whatever's left over for then what would be the best way?
You would want to have a refi exit strategy.
Okay.
So that 30-year fixed product that we would have, we would want to make sure that you're not leaving any money in the home equity line, and that it pencils out so that we can refinance it based on the after repaired value.
Like the Burr strategy, right? Buy red wing. Yeah. Okay. Makes sense.
Yep. Yes.
Right. That makes me more confident.
You're going to get the funding to get into the deal and get it rehabbed. And then once you
then
get
refinance it
and show that it's got rental income coming in, then you're going to put it over into a 30-year fixed.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
And then let the renters pay it. Then let the renters buy it for you.
That's right.
Yep.
And what we like to do is we're not only underwriting on a flip, right? We're underwriting on both strategies when we do the initial underwriting for the renovation so that we can ensure that you have an exit strategy going forward.
Well, that makes me a lot more confident. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then with that line of credit, once you pay it back, now you can use it again.
Rinse and repeat, correct?
Yep. Right. Rinse and repeat.
Yeah. And not only that, I mean, I'll admit, I get approached by so many lenders that want to, see what they can do for me. But it's all about relationship management. You know, I don't want to deal with 10 lenders. I want to deal with Omar. If the synergy is there, then the path is forward. You know what I mean? So I'm glad I joined in today because you were very in-depth and I got a good feel from your background.
Well, and thank you. I really appreciate that. The other thing about working with just one person is we've set up a system where you're working with one person from origination to underwriting to closing to the draw process all the way to payout.
Right.
And so you would be working with the same person the whole way through. And so that just kind of, reduces, the telephone game and all that.
Right. That's great.
Well, and especially Raj, since you're boots on the ground and you're out there actually doing the project, the last thing you need to do is to chase all the phone calls trying to
get admin time. Absolutely.
Right.
Totally.
Pain in the butt.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today, Raj. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. I'm going to give my contact information to you guys just so that we can stay in touch because I really like the way you ran this this meetup today. I can tell you have a wealth of background, Kathy, so I'd definitely like to support you guys in future meetups as well. And there you have my contact information in the chat.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Yes. Omar already has his information in the chat. Mine's simple. It's just my name, KathyBenner.com. And you can check out all of the replays. We talk to folks like Omar every month on the third Monday of each month at 12 noon. So feel free to tap in. And and again, we're going through the six Fs, how to find it, how to fund it, then how to fix it, how to either flip it or fill it. And then finally, what is your freedom number to make that day job optional? So so tap in. And it's the same Zoom code that you had today. You don't have to register each time. And for all of you that are on the call, you know, you can just put it right on your calendar with the Zoom code that you used today and you can get in any time on any of the calls. So we appreciate you being here. Any other questions or comments before we go today? 67 people. Yes, Deepak.
Yeah, I don't have any questions, but just want to thank Omar Kathy, you asked me for my intro when I joined, but I was trying to figure out things here. But my name is Deepak Dewali. I live with my family here in Pickerington, and I currently have one investment property and learning from Kathy and team and trying to, add more this year. So I plan to have at least two bird on this year, and I'm definitely going to reach out to you, Omar, on this process. Maybe I'll reach out sometime this week and maybe have create a file folder created and then a problem there.
Deepak, what do you do for your day job?
I'm an IT manager.
Oh
I
yeah.
work for a health insurance company. Yep.
You actually are one of the I'm overgeneralizing, but your profession lends itself well to this kind of work. Just because, you're a rule follower, you get your systems, your processes down, and then you just rinse and repeat. And that's actually one of the people that the type of person that does really well in this work is somebody who can execute consistently over time.
Omar, I agree with you. Deepak is going to go far. I love his ambition among all of his other attributes. He is definitely an ambitious young man, so I'm excited to see where he's going to go in his real estate investing.
I can't wait. Yeah, and just before I leave, I think one of the questions before you mentioned in the prep was about, kind of what excites me the most. And I think the thing that excites me the most about working with this clientele is the opportunity to help people buy their time back. Whatever you're, there's many reasons people get into real estate, right? But I think that, we only have so much time available to us. I think real estate allows for people to be able to design a life that works for them versus a life that works for their job.
I agree. I agree. I am just so excited that my aha moment actually happened in my early 40s, and I decided to go down this path because it has done well for me. It has been a blessing in my life to invest in real estate. And again, it's a double-edged sword. Not only does it help me live the life I want to live, but I can now be a housing provider for folks that need a good, safe, good quality, clean home to raise their families. And so it's something that you can feel good about, that you're bringing something to the table, that everyone needs a roof over their head. And isn't it wonderful as investors that we can be a part of that process?
Real estate has proven being over a period of time an upward trend. More reliable than any commodity, gold, you name it. And it's tangible. You can give it down to generation to generation. It's wealth created for future generations. That's why you have professionals leaving their day jobs to do real estate. They realize that's the way to go.
Well, and then the last thing is to say that, in this economic climate where we are seeing inflationary pressures, real estate is one of those things that is resistant to that. If you lock in at a 30-year fixed and rents continue to go up, but your mortgage just stays the same, well, the only thing you got to worry about is taxes, insurance, and capital expenditures. But other than that, if you are running a tight ship, you should be good.
Absolutely. I appreciate all of you being with us today. This has been great. Omar, thank you
Awesome.
so much for being a guest today. This has been wonderful. And I have a feeling that several on this call are going to be reaching out to you. And I just want to say thanks to Deepak and Sue and Sherry and Raj. Thank you so much for being on. Later today, or maybe not until tomorrow, because I've got three of these to do today. So maybe not until tomorrow will I get them uploaded, but I'll get everything uploaded in the Academy, which is at kathybinner.com. And you can just go and click through and listen to any of the replays, and the replay will be there. And Omar, I am going to send you a copy of the replay. Please feel free to use it however you wish. If you can use it in your marketing, please feel free to do that. And I'm also, as a free gift to Omar for being our guest today, he is now going to be a part of our speakers cabinet. So if any of you on this call are involved in organizations that are looking for a speaker, you'll find our speakers cabinet again at kathybinner.com, and Omar will be listed there as a professional speaker as well. So that will help promote what he's doing. And that's a gift to him to say thanks. Being on the podcast today. So with that, we're going to go, and please stay in touch. You can contact me through kathybinner.com. I'll leave this up for just a moment, but take a copy of Omar's contact information. It's there in the chat, and then I'll include it in the replay as well. So we'll see everyone next time.
Take care, everyone.
Thank you.